Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. This is the Best Ever You Show, and we're your hosts, Elizabeth Hamilton and Dr. Katie Eastman. And I've got one word for you, Katie. Snow.
Oh, no, no. Don't say that S word
no,
again.
No, no. Two more words. It's like 5 days straight now. What's going on?
I am just getting buried here. Yeah, it's one of those times when you choose, okay, do I make the best of it, or do I just, like we're going to do this afternoon, we're going to go in the hot tub in the snow, we're going to sit by the fire, we're going to make the best of it. But, yeah, I'm getting kind of sick of the S stuff.
Yeah, the S stuff. And I don't know what I'm thinking. I'm going from cold to colder tomorrow. I'm going to Minnesota. I affectionately call it Minnesota, where my whole family lives until Wednesday. And my mom said, don't worry, honey. It's warming up here. It's zero and the sun's out. Great. Zero and the sun's out. There's your clue.
Well, I'm anxious to hear what Bergen's like. Are you in New York, Bergen, or where are you?
No, I got my own S word, but it's a good one. It's called sunny California. And California and Hollywood, and it must be, it's like 75, 76. It's a beautiful, beautiful day.
Oh, well, that's good. Yeah, well, you know, you're too far to throw snowballs, so. But it sounds like, I think, you know what I did, Katie? I took the dog was looking at me like, do I dare go out in this stuff? I'm like, yes, we do. And I put on my earmuffs and out the door we went, and the dog took one look at me at the end of the street, and she was like, okay, let's go home now. So anyway, on with it. Yes. Bergen Williams, we have got you on the phone. How neat is that? I mean, I've been watching. Oh, I am too. We are huge General Hospital fans. I mean, this goes like all the way back to, you know, Luke and Laura. I mean, I used to stay home from school and watch General Hospital.
Well, I used to race home from school to see it, and it was one of our favorite shows when I was a kid. But I stopped watching it in high school, and what's funny is when I first got hired on the show, the casting director said, tell me the truth, do you watch the show? And I said, well, I haven't seen it since high school. And he said, tune in tomorrow, you'll be caught up. And sure enough, I tuned in the next day, and there was Luke, and there was Laura, and I was like, my God, it hasn't changed.
Way too funny.
You know, that is so true. It's got new plot lines, but you're back to some of the old ones all the way through. It's really it's fun. It really is fun.
Yeah, it is fun. You know, and what's funny is I had a crush on Luke when I was in high school, and he's so much more handsome now. You know, he's one of those guys like Sean Connery that just keeps getting better looking as he ages.
Oh. Yeah.
Oh,
what's his name again? Anthony Geary.
Tony Geary.
Anthony Geary. Yeah, he's a hottie, that one. In fact, one of the girls that interacts with Best Ever You sent me an email, and she, I guess, had to audition with him for, maybe it was General Hospital or something else, but I got this email back a few months ago saying, I kissed Anthony Geary in an audition. So funny. I'm like, you did. What a day. Anyway.
That's worth getting the part, even if you don't get
so,
it.
I think so, yeah. Yeah, you have a really
And he's such a nice actor too. I mean, whenever I do stuff with him, he always likes to make sure I get the good business. He always, you know, thinks of good things for me to do, and I really appreciate him. He's a very generous actor.
Yeah, he seems like he's just a good guy all around. Yeah.
Yep.
Good. Well, you have some things you read on the internet you don't know are true or false, but it sounds like you did not start out to be an actor. It sounds like it was something that you thought of doing, but what did you go to college for originally?
Well, you know, when I was in fifth grade, I wanted to be an actor for like a year, and I couldn't get in any of the shows, and then, you know, it's fifth grade, and I decided I wasn't good enough looking. I thought, oh, I'm not cute enough, that's why I'm not getting any of them. And then they did Paul Bunyan, and I got to be Paul Bunyan because I was the tallest kid in the school. But it was, you know, and then I got made fun of for being a guy, so having to play a guy, so I kind of gave that dream up and went into things that I tested at a better aptitude, which was sciences. So originally, I went to college to study. I think I started off as a math major, then I went to physics, and I ended up as a chemistry major at UC Berkeley, which I love. I love sciences, but it just wasn't using enough of my brain. And so in my senior year of chemistry, I went to the dean of chemistry, and I said, do we have like a film school or a drama department or anything like that here? And, and he said, yeah, there's one. He was like, what? And I just kind of had, it's a very sexist field, science, too. And I thought about it, and I thought, do I want to fight this the rest of my life? Yeah. And I didn't. So I thought I'd go to my original dream when I was very young, which was to be in the arts. And so I went down and convinced them to let me into the School of Drama because they were thinking, what, you science geek? You know, and
yeah.
So I think they let me in as just to see what would happen. And I loved it. I flourished and I came down to Hollywood.
And after you graduated, what did you do first? What's the very first thing you do after you graduate with that kind of a degree?
Okay, well, I did something wacky as I went to Hawaii for a month and a half to work on a dolphin documentary where this dance troupe from San Francisco, whenever we would find dolphins, they were supposed to jump in the water and dance with them while we shot it.
Wow.
But it was a bunch of wacky people who I was supposed to be like the assistant producer because I'd never thought of being in front of the camera as a career. I actually wanted to be behind the camera as a writer, producer, director.
Oh.
And it was never my intention to be an actress. And so I was on this thing in Hawaii, but, you know, the producer was always in a tree somewhere stoned. And it's like after a month and a half, I thought, not, you know, it's like, you know, rich kids with trust funds deciding to do a documentary. So they're always high or doing something. So I finally got on the plane and went home and came down to Los Angeles and got a job as Joe Bologna and Renee Taylor's personal assistant.
Oh.
And I don't know if you know who they are, but
wonderful
writers and actors. Like Renee Taylor is very, very talented. She played the mother on The Nanny, Fran Drescher's mother.
Yeah.
And
yep.
Joe Bologna, really good actor. So I worked as their writing assistant, and I really learned, I really looked at that as Hollywood boot camp, because it was tough. These people were hustlers, really, really hardworking people, always pulling angles, and I learned a lot about the business from them.
Yeah.
So that's the first thing I did. And I got my first acting job because I had an agent there. Their agent, I kept begging them, you know, because I wanted to just for fun try to do some acting. I thought I could earn some extra money, and I begged him to send me out an audition, and he finally did, and I got my very first audition. So I got the part, and so then he started representing me, and then, you know, acting became my waitress job that never ended.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because I'm still trying to be a director, goddammit, you know, but I seem to act instead. Yeah, but I have done other things. I was the head writer on Power Rangers for a season, and that was really nice.
Oh, I love Power Rangers. I have this thing in my head where I want to move to Los Angeles, and for some reason my next-door neighbor is a Power Ranger actor. It's one of my recurring things I think about is just somewhat funny for some reason. I don't know why, but it seems like I always think of moving to Los Angeles and wondering who I'm going to end up living next to. And it could be the Power Ranger.
Well, there's a good chance you can end up next to a Power Ranger actor because they changed them all out every season, and there's like 20 seasons. There's a bunch of them spread around Hollywood.
Yeah. Well, I did when I worked for this company at in St. Paul, Minnesota. They sent me to Los Angeles to teach a training class, and so I walked in, and my training class was filled with the Power Rangers. All the actors from Power Rangers. So that was my dream come true. You know, I just got to, you know, I didn't really live near them. I got to train them. So, but that was their day job, I guess, or their night job. It was their night job. All of them were third shift. It was just bizarre, and it was years and years and years ago. But it was pretty funny anyway to train a bunch of Power Rangers on a computer.
Yeah.
Anyway.
That's funny.
So, Katie, you're awfully quiet. I know you've got something to ask.
My 8-year-old just interrupted me. Bergen, your story is so fascinating to me. There's just so many different things I want to talk to you about. But first of all, I want to ask you the question I love to ask people about their story. What was it inside of you that said, okay, I got to get on a plane and leave Hawaii? Because you seem to be a person that really knows what you want and how to get it, and you're not going to stop till you get it. Where does that come from, Bergen?
I think it's I just don't want to let myself down, you know?
Okay.
I think that's what it is. I think that a lot of us do things because we don't want to disappoint our mother, which is also there for me. I mean, who doesn't want to, you know, make their mother proud of them? But inside, I know I can do good things. And I've been kind of a slacker here and there. And so sometimes I just realize, you know, I don't want to let myself down. I want to do the best that I can do for myself. And even so, leaving Hawaii was big for me because I was starting to get, I was starting to think, yeah, I can hang around Hawaii and just do this with these people, you know, and I didn't want to start partying with them, and I could see that I could easily have fallen into what was happening, and I needed to get out. I just got out of college, and I had gotten out late. I mean, I didn't start college until I was 24 years old because I, you know, I kind of partied a lot when I was younger, and it took me that long to get serious, and here I was finally graduated, and I graduated well. And now here was back with slackers. And so it was hard, you know, and I could see myself falling into that trap. And I was like, no, no, I'm going to do better by myself. And so I left and I went to L.A.
Wow.
It's easy
That's
to
so
be
cool.
lured by people with money and parties and fabulous living. And, you know, you kind of forget yourself sometimes. And I didn't want to do that. I could see that I could and I didn't want to. So I left.
So you had a real strong sense of wanting to take the best care of yourself you could. And
yes.
and that's something that, you know, we really like to hear from people is where did they learn that? Where did you learn that? How did you get that way?
Well, I'd have to say my grandfather. My grandfather is a huge influence on me. We're Volga Deutsches. My grandparents' family escaped the Volga River while the Russians were going down, you know, slaughtering all the Germans. And, you know, they basically, like, hopped on a boat with their knapsack and came to America. And my grandfather was such a hard worker, and he taught me really, I mean, he gave me very stern, hard lessons. But I've used them throughout my life, especially now since I've started a little cookie business. I can't tell you how many times I channel my grandfather, who always had one or two businesses going. He was always working. He had a really strong work ethic, and I really admired him for it.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, that's a great story, yeah. Speaking of cookies, let's go there for a second. I'm looking at your website, which is bergenwilliams.wordpress.com, and there are cookies on it. And we were talking a little bit before we went on air that your Thursdays are your – what do you do on Thursdays? You bake a lot of cookies for someone.
Yes, I rent a commercial kitchen on Thursdays, and in there I go and bake all my cookies that I sell at the farmers markets on Saturday and Sunday. And I also have a website, eatmecookies.com, where I sell online. And the cookies I sell are all vegan. And some of them are gluten-free. I actually designed a cookie for Sarah Brown. Sarah Brown had who's on Bold and Beautiful now, but she was the original Carly on General Hospital and then got killed off as Claudia last year. And but she talked to me about being aware of gluten-free people and that I should, you know, because I was always bringing cookies to General Hospital and she could never have any because they weren't gluten-free. I was just making vegan cookies for myself because when I went vegan for health reasons, I realized these cookies suck out here. They're all full of oil. I was feeling sick from them. And so I developed my own cookie for me because I like cookies. And then she convinced me to do gluten-free cookies and then everyone else said, you should just be selling these. So on Thursdays, I rent the kitchen, and I just make, like last night, all day yesterday, I made 64 dozen cookies.
Oh, my word. Wow.
Yeah, it's a lot of work. So, and I had three people helping me, and still it was really hard. So.
Yeah, that's pretty similar to when we lived up in Tahoe. When I very first started staying home with my four boys, my mom said to me, you're only going to bake so many cookies before you go nuts. And I said, I don't know, Mom, here's the Tahoe Cookie Company. And I started a cookie company also. And they're all nut-free cookies.
Oh, yeah, I looked at your website. Yeah.
So maybe there's something we can do together there. That might be kind of fun with cookies. What makes a cookie vegan or gluten-free? What ingredients does it lack?
Well, there's no eggs and no dairy.
Okay.
At all. And I use absolutely no oil. I don't add any oil at all. So I don't even use the vegan margarine or some people use olive oil in their cookies. And what makes them gluten-free is I use gluten-free flour, Bob's Red Mill gluten-free flour, very good flour. And I make sure, and because of Sarah Brown, she told me about that, I have to be aware of what vanilla I'm putting in because of the grain alcohol. So she really schooled me on gluten-free and pointed me to some websites.
Oh, yeah.
And I've been following the very, very strict guidelines because I feel responsible when I'm making cookies that people are going to put in their mouth that, you know, I want to make sure it's the best, it's healthiest, it's exactly what they need, and they're not going to get any kind of toxic byproduct, you know, like you do in other cookies that are filled full of...
Yeah.
Who knows what?
Butter like mine?
Yeah.
I went to go mail somebody a box of cookies, and 12 cookies weighed 7 pounds. I'm like,
Wow, how much butter are you putting in those cookies?
Anyway, All right. So on your website, it says One Big Life, a weblog of health, nutrition, and life. What is it about your life that made you start this?
Well, okay, I haven't actually started the blog yet. I think I wrote just like a little something, and I want to start doing it every week, but I got so sidetracked with the cookie business, and I'm doing a web series too. But what I wanted to do, the reason I thought One Big Life, not because I'm a big, huge personality, but I'm a big person, and I try to do every, I mean, I'm big. You know, when you're 6'1" and a half, and a lot of my years I spent over 300 pounds, when you're a big person in life, you know, life happens big to you, you know, it's interesting. And so because people react to you instantly when you walk into a room, you're always aware of everything because you're not, you can't kind of slide by anywhere. So you're constantly interacting with everything, whether it's negative or positive. And when you're big, when you're 6'1" and you weigh 358 pounds, a lot of it's negative. And so you have to look, you know, really try to learn, you know, how can I feel good about myself in a world where people don't feel good about looking at me? Do you understand what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I think you start looking at the world different. And so that's why I thought One Big Life would be a good name for my blog, because I'm very reflective, and I guess that's it. I'm very reflective. I like to look at things not only in terms of myself, but how it can affect other people going through what I've been through or what I am going through.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the things health wise that you have been through? It sounds like a couple of things. I read one of your articles and it was about dying twice. What do you mean by that? And what's happened to you?
Well, you know, I have a crazy, literally crazy genetic disorder called Wilson's disease, and it's where you don't process copper, and copper builds up in your brain, and it can cause schizophrenia, bipolar, severe depression, ADD. It also builds up in your liver, causing cirrhosis, and most people with my disease are diagnosed in an autopsy before they're 30 because the liver disease usually gets them, or the depression, you know, makes them kill themselves. So, and copper's in all the things we eat. And to explain to you how that affects you, when a woman is about to start her cycle, about 10 days before she does that, the body says, gee, we need some copper because we got to start making red blood cells. So you start craving copper. Now, what foods are high in copper? Chocolate, peanuts. You know, how many chicks crave chocolate, you know, around that time? I mean, I do. Who doesn't? Because your body's saying, I need copper. I need extra copper. So whatever you eat high in copper is what you crave. And so the problem is we're not that balanced anymore. And so we eat too much of that copper. And so when you get too much copper in your brain, or you eat too much of the chocolate, then that's what starts the rage, the emotional ups and downs, because it blocks your emotional processing center.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, I was PMSing my whole life before they diagnosed me. Now, I was lucky enough to live to 35 before I got diagnosed, and they said I wouldn't have lived to the end of the year had they not found it. So, and I had a lot of trouble. I studied Buddhism. I did all these things trying to figure out, why am I so angry all the time? Why are these things upsetting me? How come I can't understand what people are telling me? Why am I misreading people's emotions? And I thought it was me. So I've done tons and tons of self-help stuff trying to figure out what's wrong with me, just to find out, well, it wasn't me. I just had too much copper in my brain. And it took them six years to pull all the copper out, because they can't just rip it out, because, you know, they'll kill you. And so it takes a long time to chelate it, and it was just shocking to me, shocking when it was all gone, to look around and go, oh, this is what it's like to be normal. It was normal as I can be, you know, because it's very, so that was a very distressing thing. And as soon as I found out, as soon as I had decoppered and I was doing great, and I had gotten, you know, I'd just gotten on General Hospital, and I got the head writing job on Power Rangers, and then I get told I have incurable cancer and I'm going to die in 2 to 5 years. So I'm like, what? I just got through this whole liver thing. You know, I just survived that. I just got done dying. You know, I don't want to have to die again. So then I had to go on a whole new adventure
dying.
To try to. I mean, I just, you know,
it's not
to go
funny,
on a
but
new.
That's a great approach to it.
Well, it really pissed me off. I mean, I know some people, when they get told they have cancer, they're like, oh my God. I'm like, what? No way. I just got done doing that. You know, it just wasn't fair. So I had to go on another journey, you know.
Yep. And Katie, I'll let you chime in again.
Well, you know, it's just part of your story I can so resonate with is I've worked with kids that have these kinds of conditions, and one kid had Menkes disease, which is similar. And what really strikes me is how you had the tenacity, as did his parents, to keep fighting the medical system to say, there's something wrong with me, but you're not telling me what it is, until they finally did say, oh, this is what it is. And I think that is just so crucial that everybody remember that everybody's a human being here, and if you know in your body that something's wrong and there's a reason for something and nobody's telling you what that reason is, you keep asking till you find the person who finds the right answer.
Absolutely, and it's so important to listen to your own body, to listen to those little voices in your head. And I don't mean the crazy ones I got from too much copper. I mean the ones that are, because I remember when I was in junior high thinking, I think I have an incurable disease. I think I have cancer. I remember thinking in junior high, and that's really when I started changing my personality quite a bit. In fact, my mom took me to Kaiser when I was 9 years old and said, something's happened to my daughter. Her personality has changed. She's getting mad all the time. My mom noticed. I went from being this happy-go-lucky, hey, you know, hang out with me, girl, into, like, you know, putting my fist through the door, chasing after my brother. I mean, the violence that came out of me was horrendous. She took me to Kaiser, and Kaiser said, oh, she's just a big girl, and she's acting out. No tests, no nothing. And this is the kind of treatment I got from the medical. I can't tell you how many horrible diagnoses I've gotten that probably hurt my liver even more, trying to put me on drugs I didn't need to take. You know, it's just you have to take charge of your body like someone takes charge of their car. You're not just going to let some stranger drive your car or tell you what you got to put in it. You know, people take more care of their car than they do their body.
Well, and I think the point, too, being that, and we've said this before on the show, that physicians are human beings, and sometimes they don't know. And just to keep going until somebody happens to know. And I just think that I really want to applaud the fact that you just kept going. And that's great, Bergen. What a great message you have of what tenacity can do.
Thank you. But, I mean, you know, but I was pushed. You know, my mom is a wonderful woman. She's a very strong influence in my life. And she's always, you know, tried to encourage me to be the best that I could be. And even when I was struggling with these things that we didn't know I had, Wilson's disease, and I was trying to study Buddhism and stuff, my mom has always been in my corner. And when other people thought I was like, God, she's such an angry woman, what's her issue? My mom always told me that, you know, you're special, you've got good talents, you know, you just got to figure out how to use them. And so I'm lucky. I'm lucky I have a good support system, because not everybody does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really good point. And as parents, those of us that are parents, that's always really important for us to hear, too, because, you know, we're trying to learn how to be good parents. And when people like yourself share that story, that helps us remember that, yeah, that's a big part of it, too. If we as parents, if our kid comes to us and says, you know, I don't feel well, and I just want to put a note in there, this kid that I was telling you about, you know, he screamed forever as an infant, and nobody could figure out why. And it ended up being this copper issue, but it was his parents' perseverance to say, you know, no, this is more than teething. This is far worse than teething, that kept the medical teams going, trying to figure out, well, what is this? And so just it's really important as parents that, I don't care how old your baby, your infant or your child, if they're really sick and they're telling you they're sick, listen. And I think sometimes we don't listen to kids, and kids have their own idea of their own bodies, and they sometimes have wisdom we can't figure out. So I think that's a really important part of your message too.
Bergen, are you cancer free? Are you okay now?
Well, I was getting tested every year, and I'm totally, there's no sign of the cancer, but I have an interesting kind of cancer. Carcinoid cancer is a cancer of the endocrine system, where your body just keeps making tumors and making tumors, and then they keep going in and cutting them out and cutting them out until there's nothing left but you in a colostomy bag and you die. And so I don't know if I've completely got it out of my endocrine system because it becomes a working part of the endocrine system making cancer. But since I'm not eating anything at all that feeds cancer, I don't have any cancer. So I have no tumors. It's not growing. But and also for me, you know, some people that I've helped other people through their cancer battles, and I know after they, you know, have their lumpectomy or have the tumor taken out of their stomach or whatever, that they think, okay, now I'm fine, and they kind of stay on the vegan diet. But I'm not sure if that's wise. However, for me, I feel like I can never go off this diet. I can never put food that's going to feed cancer into my body because I got this distorted endocrine system just waiting to jump on it, you know. So,
yeah. Mm-hmm. What does your diet look like? I notice also that you've lost a lot of weight as well.
Oh, I've lost over 100 pounds.
Isn't that neat? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but you know what's fun about the diet is that, I mean, it's actually a way of eating. I hate to call it a diet, but
it's not really a diet.
I eat a high starch plant-based diet, no added oil, and I try to cut down on the sugar, but making cookies, you know, that's kind of tough. but I only use organic sugar. But what was that? I got lost by that. But
we were talking about. Just not necessarily a diet, like meaning like a diet you go on to drop pounds, but more of like a like what you eat to stay healthy and so forth, and what you are eating that makes it so that cancer doesn't, you know, like you.
Yeah, well, you know, the best thing that I gave up, I think, was dairy products, because boy, if that's going to make anything grow, it's that. But what I eat mainly is I eat a lot of rice, I eat a lot of potatoes. You know, potatoes got a bad name, and I tell people I eat potatoes all the time, and they're like, what? Well, you know, potatoes.
I do too. I do too.
Yeah,
I eat them for breakfast with vegetables every day of my life.
Yeah. My wife and I bake little potatoes, and we eat them before we go to the gym, if we go running, if we're going to run more than 4 or 5 miles, where other people have those little gross gel packs they're eating for sugar to re-nutrify, we just eat our little fingerling potatoes. And and that's one thing I was pointing out about my diet is I was really heavy, and when I went to the vegan diet, I started getting all this energy. And I was thinking, what do I do with this energy? And I started running. And since then, I've run like 5 marathons and I don't know how many half marathons because I just had all this energy. And I discovered also from the diet and losing all the weight that I'm ADD. Well, I didn't know I was ADD before. I just thought I was, you know, a flake. But I and I've also, for anyone out there who's ADD, it's a superpower. I mean, my God, that's why I can make 64 dozen new cookies. You know, I can do all these things. It's like, my God, I have the superpower I unleashed, you know. As long as you can stay focused, you know.
Oh, that is funny. You turn,
yeah.
I love this interview. You know what I love about you most? You turn anything crappy in life, and you turn it into just the most beautiful thing in the world. You are so cool.
Oh, it's
cool.
Great.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
you are, yeah. Oh.
Yeah, you're the epitome of turning lemons into lemon meringue pie.
Oh,
no, not just lemon. Not just lemonade. You go all the way to lemon meringue pie. I mean,
well,
I don't use
meringue because that's egg white now, but I am.
You're going to say that.
but I am working on a lemon poppy seed cookie that's frustrating me every week. Every week I come up with a new version, and it's not quite,
well,
but I will make it into lemon.
I should connect you with my mom then, because she has a lemon poppy seed cookie that is vegan, sugar, everything free that my dad can eat, because my dad has strokes and so forth. So I'll get it from my mom. I'm leaving for Minnesota.
I'd love to look at that.
Yeah, she's got some. My mom's a great baker like that too. You just said something, and I was thinking. Oh, marathons.
Yeah.
How do you do that? We've had one marathon runner on before, and she's like, I don't know, I just can. I work and I run and whatever. But seriously, my body, I don't think, would run a marathon. You know, if somebody said, here's $1 million, go run that marathon, I think I'd have to pass. You know,
well, you know
my body just doesn't
hard.
Do that.
it was hard at first, you know, like when I decided I'm going to be a runner, I decided I was going to be a runner without even running once. I signed up for a half marathon that was 3 months away. I bought all the gear. I made my wife go take CPR classes so she could learn how to revive me in case I drop dead of a heart attack while I'm running. And I made her come with me. And the first, I'm serious. So she took the CPR classes. I brought her with me my first day of running. I lasted 57 seconds. And that's You know, I was like, oh my God, what was I thinking? You know, but she liked it. You know, she left me in the dust and went running for 5 minutes and then came back. And then I think the next time I ran 2 minutes and then I got a better book where I learned how to run walk, where I walk for 1 minute and run for 2 minutes. And now I'm up to the point, I don't run the whole marathon. I'm not crazy. I don't want to be that tired. But when I do a marathon, I run for 5 minutes and I walk for 1 minute. And that 1 minute of recovery makes it so I can run a marathon. Like, yeah, it takes me 5.5 hours, but I have a fun time. And the next day I can function. So
it's fun, Bergen, because I ran one about 5 years ago, and I could never, never run one now. But 5 years ago, I did it, and I did it the way you're talking about. And what happens when you do it is afterwards, don't you get this sense that you can accomplish just about anything? Because
yes.
It just feels like such a huge accomplishment, and it's a perfect example of what you just described. You can do it incrementally. It's not that overwhelming when you take it 5 minutes at a time. And before you know it, you're doing a mile.
Yeah, absolutely. It took me a long time to build up. I mean, when I ran my first half marathon, those 3 months after I started training, it took – I mean, my foster sister came with me, Wendy, and she was running with me to spot run me, and there was like this 78-year-old woman in front of me in the last quarter mile of the run, and she was really heavy. And Wendy goes, "Just pass her up, Bergen, just pass her up." And I think she heard and started running faster, and I couldn't reach her. And after that, I thought, "Oh my God! I mean, this is like the hardest thing ever. I mean, it was really, really difficult, but it just spurred me on. I thought, I'm never gonna be able to not catch." Up to a 78-year-old woman again. So I worked very hard at it, but it is easy.
Great.
If you do it incrementally, you can do it. You know, it just takes a while, and you do have these little hurdles you have to get over every now and then to get to the next level. But I love it.
Oh yeah, my trainer was constantly
saying,
"Slow down, slow down, slow down."
Yeah,
that was my big thing.
Yeah. Once I started doing a little hill training, that really changed everything. But for me, this is what's funny is. I would have to say out of the, let's say, 10 big runs that I've done, 8 of them, the next day, they're always on Sundays, 8 of them I've had to work the next day on General Hospital, and it's always the day they go, "Hey, can you carry this guy up and down the stairs?" It's always like the next day I have to, like, carry someone, you know, or pick something huge up, and I'm like, what? I mean, what was his name, that Australian guy that I had to, like, firemen throw over my shoulder and take up the stairs. That was the day after I ran the LA Marathon.
As long as it wasn't Hugh Jackman.
Yeah. No, no.
Oh, no.
Well. I'd volunteer for that. No. That marathon running. Katie, I just heard you say never, and I'm thinking we are. I think that's our new goal is to run a marathon together.
We're going to have to run a marathon. You can run a half marathon. You can run
it
running
there,
2 minutes, walking one.
Yep.
Well, you know why
there.
I don't want to do it again is because of the time it took to train for it. It took so much out of my life. And
but
at the time, I wasn't a mom.
Body.
Huh?
Yeah, but it takes time out of your life, but it adds to your health and your body.
Right. And I want to get back to the place of health, but not. I don't have any desire to go 26 miles again, because I just feel like I did it once and that was what I wanted to do, but I would love to, running is, I love to run. I totally love to run.
Well, and half marathons are nice events. You know, you can do a half marathon in less than 3 hours and you're recovered by the end of the day. Well, the way I do it.
And
I mean,
like
you run
a half.
Really fast. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the key, Bergen. You're right. You don't have to do it like everybody else. I mean, I was trotting up the back and I had a 90-year-old man pass me, so that was not fun, but he runs he's been running for the last 40 years, so, you know, he just runs marathons his whole life. So, but that was a bit of an ego hit, but.
I tell that, you know, I tell my boot camp story. I mean, I signed up for boot camp thinking, you know, I'm in shape, I can do this, you know, And the instructor said, okay, everybody, we're going to go run a mile. And I wasn't expecting part of boot camp to be running. So, you know, and you're there, so you have to go do it. And I, it took me, Bergen, like, I mean, it was awful. My kids laughed. It was like 20 mm-hmm. minutes or more to run a mile, and I was walking
wow.
it, and I could hardly breathe or anything. And it was that chat you have with yourself of, I am so out of shape, this is embarrassing. And I think since then I've been on a quest to just even learn how to run 1 mile. And I think the thing I hear over and over again is do it, you know, even if I have to like run for a minute and then walk for a minute, run for a minute, walk, something interval I think will maybe help me reach that goal.
Yeah,
like that,
absolutely. That's how I
yeah.
started. I mean, I couldn't even run a minute the first time.
Yeah.
So,
very interesting. I have a question for you, and I don't know if you want to talk about this or not. You were saying wife. Who is your wife, and what does she do, and what part of your life does she play?
Well, my wife is Ellender Wall. We got married a couple years ago during the 3 months it was legal, and we were together for 10 years before that. And she's an opera singer and an actress. And she's instrumental, totally. I mean, without her, I probably wouldn't even be alive, because we did so much research trying to figure out an alternative to me dying that it was her who found the book, The China Study. And in fact, we got that book from Amazon.com, which is interesting, because this is the good thing about Amazon.com, and I'm not getting paid for this plug, but you know, that you order so many books, and then they say, hey, and then they suggest a new one. Well, we had been ordering all these health books, and they suggested, like, hey, maybe you want to read this book, The China Study. So she got it, and there was the answer in this book. And it happened at the same time that I had gone to a Dr. McDougall weekend seminar where they talk about the vegan diet, and I saw some vegan chefs. So they happened at the same time, and then we decided to change our whole lifestyle to this. So she, in support, went vegan also. But, you know, wow, you know, now she's running too, and she lost like 40 pounds. And it was great for both of us. And our families have, you know, we have friends, and so we've probably 25 people we know have also changed their health to what we're doing.
Yeah.
So she's go on.
Oh, no, go ahead. I didn't mean to.
I was just saying she's a wonderful, beautiful lady, and she's like, I think she's in like 4 shows coming up here in LA. I should post on Facebook what operas she's in so people can go see her if they want.
Yeah, no, that would be great. Yeah. Katie, did you have anything to ask?
No, I was so excited to hear she's an opera singer, because you know how much I love opera, and you know, it's that must just be a wonderful combination. I mean, it's just a wonderful combination in your home of,
and
I'm so struck by your world and your story being, you know, you were a scientist, and then and you said, I want to use the other part of my brain. And God, that was just so cool to hear as a therapist. I love hearing stuff like that. And you went and used the other side of you. And in your home, you have this wonderful creative part of both of you. And this, I mean, it just sounds like quite a wonderful couple and a nice balance. And a great example of how a supportive spouse and partner or friend can really make a difference.
Yeah.
Family can really make a difference when you're trying to make
Absolutely.
Change in your life.
It's very important. I don't know if I could have done it without her, and my mom and my sister. You know, everyone, my dad. I have, you know, my best friends. I mean, everyone was there for me. And but you know, it's everyone has their point that they decide I have to change my life. And believe it or not, even when they said you have cancer and you're going to die, that wasn't enough for me to want to change my life. It was, to me, it was just horribly inconvenient and cruel. But when they told me that I was going to end up with a colostomy bag, that just freaked the hell out of me. I thought, oh my God, I can't have one of
yeah.
those. And so it was the idea of having a colostomy bag that frightened me so much I had to change everything. You know, I mean, it's worse than death.
Oh yeah,
in my mind, because unfortunately, if I mean, or I had a friend whose mother coincidentally had carcinoid cancer also, and I had met him, and I told him I had this disease I was trying to figure out, and he said his mom had it, and that's how I found out about the colostomy bag, because she died right after that on a colostomy bag, and I was just horrified by the state that she was in. And I thought, I'm not doing that. That's not going to be me. I'm big and strong. You know, I want to go down big and strong. You know, that's how I feel.
Yeah, I love the fact when you said you're 6'1" and a half, because mm-hmm. I'm 5'2", and three quarters.
Oh.
I always joke that I'm 5'4 on a big hair day.
Yeah, that's
but I
funny.
Love that you added that half.
Well, I played college basketball, and I really wanted to be 6'2", and it just pissed me off I didn't grow that extra half inch. But
I'm with you.
Yeah.
I so badly just want to say I'm something like 5'4", even, you know, and
yeah.
It just doesn't happen for me. My kids are all taller than me, and my kids measure how tall they am by how much taller they are than me.
Yeah,
anyway.
That's funny.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I got a little mom. My mom's only 5'4", so she says she's 5'5", but I know she's lying.
Oh, you know, my parents, I don't know what happened to me. I always say it was all the drugs my parents did, because my mom is like 5'9", and my dad is like 6'2", and it's just not physically possible that I'm 5'2", but here I am. And I blame it on them. Holy. They smoked
the
something, cooked something. My mom's like, oh, yeah, I dropped diet pills the whole time I was pregnant with you. I'm like, thanks. Reason why.
Back
anyway.
In the day, yeah.
Oh, gosh. Katie, you didn't need to hear that. Anyway, I want to go to, if we can for a moment, to the directing thing.
Okay.
What are some goals you have to be a director? Or how do you go about doing that? Do you just say, I want to be a director, and somebody knocks on your doors and says, come on.
Well, that's the dream, isn't it? But it doesn't happen that way. But I directed theater in college and had done quite well, actually, at it. And so I just figured I could come to Hollywood and be a director. But it's a very difficult field to get into, and I think especially for women. And I've directed a couple short films that one of them won an award in San Diego for, I can't remember the title it was. It was like the coolest film we don't understand. So I thought, okay, I got to fix my technique. Because it was shot well. I mean, I shot it. I had this little, like, I don't know if you've seen, you know, when you see the guy with the tambourine and the drum and everything all on him. I mean, that's kind of how I was directing. I had my little Steadicam and the camera, and I was doing sound, camera, action, everything. But now I'm doing I've got a web series I'm producing, and it starts in March. And I'm actually acting in it also, but I'm not going to start off directing it. I have a wonderful director who's going to direct it, Christian Cardonas. He's the TD over the technical director on Bones, and he's going to direct the first season, I hope, the whole first season. I know he's doing the first episode, but I just kind of want to watch him, and I'd like to step in maybe in the second season of the web series to direct an episode or two. But, you know, at this point, I was really eager to do it when I first got here in town. In fact, I wrote a movie called Badges, which was about a 25-year reunion of Girl Scouts that went awry, and I got the money funding for it, and I was a Girl Scout when I was a kid, and I loved this. I have lots of funny Girl Scout things in this movie, but all women, and all 40-something women, though, reliving their Girl Scout days. It's kind of
curated.
It's a brownie troop. But anyway, I've written this movie, and I got it funded, and I was going to direct it, and I'd cast it with some. I was really excited. I'd only been in town like 4 years, and I was already doing my first movie, and then the earthquake hit. And, the Northridge quake hit, wiped out my investor. It was just like crazy. And then right after that, I started getting really sick. And that's when the Wilson's disease was overtaking me, and I was sick all the time. And in fact, I got told I had AIDS. I went to the hospital. I was so sick. And they took one look at me and said, oh, my God, you have AIDS. And I was like, what? You know, so that whole plan kind of fell apart. And then for the next 6 years, I was just struggling to get healthy again. And so my career had to go second. And then when I came back and I was healthy again, I don't know, it's like I forgot the route to directing. I'd figured it out when I was younger, but now I had to worry about bills and everything, so I didn't have time to just go off on a directing adventure. But now, hopefully, within my web series that I'm doing, I'll be able to study with someone very, very good and maybe direct an episode or two myself next year.
Yeah. Well, that sounds lovely, and I want to go back to the Badges thing for a minute, because that is funny. Katie, were you a Girl Scout by any chance?
Oh, gosh, yes, all the way through.
Oh, me too.
I was one of those bizarre young kids who went all the way up to cadet and senior.
Yeah, me too. Oh, yeah. If you do that movie ever, would you please promise to give us a small bit part of something? Because,
absolutely.
Okay, because when I was a Girl Scout, I was a psychotic Girl Scout. I mean, I wanted to, like, kill everybody in my path for the badges, you know. I not only have badges, I have badges. I mean, I would go through that book and check each thing off to, you know, okay, I helped an older person. I cleaned this. I did that. I mean, I was the Girl Scout. Just, oh. they did that. Yeah, the badges.
I was very driven
things.
By the badges myself, yes.
Oh. Yeah.
Oh, well, and when it comes to the cookie thing, I mean, let me tell you, sold the most cookies.
Oh, I did something horrible. I did something horrible. You can ask my parents to this day. I went through the neighborhood and I sold cookies. I mean, hundreds of boxes of cookies. And I overcharged people and took the money.
Oh, you shame
I had to
you.
Write a letter. Oh. I had to apologize. I had to give money back to neighbors. I mean, that was the entrepreneur cookie
uh-huh.
person.
Why not get a little
terrible.
Help on the side?
Oh.
You know?
My parents were horrified. They're like, where did you get all this money? I'm like, well, you know, it said $7.99 a box. I did $9. Terrible. Oh, anyway. Okay.
Oh, Lord.
Oh, yeah. All right. It says, it says here you've been a forklift driver before. Where was that?
That was in Woodland, California, it was at a pipe factory. Woodland is, I don't know, out in the boondocks of Sacramento. And I couldn't find a job. I couldn't find a swing shift job, and I wanted a swing shift job so I could try to take classes during one of my many attempts to go to college and when I was younger. And so there was this plant out there that I knew this guy that worked at and made good money, and I went out and asked if I could have a job, and they'd never hired a woman before ever. And I had just affirmative action had just started. I mean, I was really young, and I talked about affirmative action. And I remember telling the guy, people will look at you favorably if you hire a woman. And the guy just looked at me like, get out of here. But but I mean, I'm such a dork. I must have been 17. I don't know what I was. But but he hired me, and I got other women in too in there. So it was a great little job. I mean, it was the only job a girl could get at the time that I made $10 an hour.
Yeah.
And if I gotten a job doing anything else, I'd have gotten 3 or 4. So
yeah.
I made a lot. It's making good money.
How did you, it says here, a salad chef and a roofer. There's a lot of different things here. There's software analyst, forklift driver, legal secretary, welder, salad chef, and roofer.
Yes.
Go there for a minute with me. Which one
okay.
of those? Yeah. Like I've been fired from KCBY before, so you know.
Well, I was a roofer because I was dating this girl whose brother owned a roofing company. And so I got a job with my girlfriend's brother. And it was kind of cool. I learned how to weld. It was PVC roofing. So I was a hot air welder. And I would not only was I the hot air welder, but he made me the field technician or field supervisor. So I'm the one who had all the money and to buy the lunches and stuff. And his whole crew was nothing but these bikers from Boston. And I had the money. And if they wanted to, you know, they'd go buy us some beer for lunch. And I'd say no. And then they'd put me on the harness and dangle me from the roof. You know, I'm 4 stories up being dangled by bikers. You know, buy us beer. And I'm like, no, you know. You know, and so they'd eventually, you know, pull me up because the people below would be horrified. And and so that was my roofing job. That lasted about 6 months. I got kind of, you know, tired of having to be tough with all these guys all the time.
Oh, yeah.
Plus, I had gotten the job I was waiting for in computers. And and that's how I went from a key punch operator to a systems analyst in that job. I just kind of worked a lot of jobs when I was young because I kept failing at college. I was out of high school before I was 16 and started going to college at 16. And every semester I dropped out because I would be distracted by life. And, you know, and then I'd get some job and try to, you know, lie to people that I was still in school, but I really wasn't. It wasn't until 24 that I actually, I actually went to school and I stayed until I finished.
Yeah. Did you?
Oh, you're such a, sorry, Elizabeth, you're such a great example, Bergen, of there's no such thing as an overnight success. You know, you really are. Every piece of your life was played a part in the next part.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, absolutely. I'm there. You know, there's things that you go through in life that you go, damn it, I wish I'd never done that, or I wish I wouldn't have dated him or her or whatever, or all the things that you go through. There's always some point later that you grab from that and you go, oh, wow, thank God I could find the lesson in that, because it happens later. Either it helps you avoid that happening again, or it helps you help someone else or go a different direction. And So, yeah, I've had a lot of bad experiences, but I've had a lot of great experiences. And all of them make me, and I kind of like me now. So it's all good.
Oh, yeah. Do you, of some of the shows you've appeared on, we watched your reel and posted it before we went on the air. What's that like to be on all these different shows? Is that fun? Is it hard work? I dream of that type of stuff. I think there's always this like secret actor in me too. I mean, I love to be in commercials and do some of the things I do. But when you're actually doing this for a job and earning money and real serious about it, is it all fun and games or is it really serious?
It's all serious, I think, getting the part. You know, it's hard. I mean, in the beginning when I was doing it, it just seemed like, wow, because I had a decent income as an assistant, and if I got a part or not, it didn't make or break my day. It was just exciting, you know. But when you decide to make it your living, it's very stressful, and there's a lot of serious stuff involved, and there's politics that go on that have nothing to do with your talent or lack thereof. And I'm not even that great of I'm not a good actress. I never wanted to be an actress, so you know, it's just something that I don't think there's very many people with my physical type. You know, I mean, I'm big and I don't mind being a buffoon and I'm kind of scary looking, and there's like maybe 5 women I go up against all the time. It's not like, in fact, my agent, when he first signed me, he said, Bergen, I'm going to sign you because, you know, in this town there's like 10,000 beautiful women, but there's only 5 of you.
Great.
And I said, gee, thanks. But he said it real excitingly, you know, so I thought, okay, I guess that's a compliment. But
well,
he's right. There's like 5 women my type that I'm always up against. So.
Yeah, it definitely seems like there's a whole look of everything. But I love the one thing that I loved in your reel that made me giggle very hard was the whole Scrubs thing.
Uh-huh. I loved working on that show.
Yeah.
That was such a fun show to work on.
Oh yeah.
And then that was one of those golden shows I got. I mean, I don't know what happened. They'd cast somebody else and I don't know if they didn't work out or they got sick or whatever, but I got that show without an audition. You know, my agent called and talked me into that without an audition. I just showed up and worked. Now, I was really scared because I think I'm going to show up and they're going to go, what? Who the hell are you? But that was such a good show
perfect.
To do, and I didn't even have to audition for it. So,
like
fond
I just
memory.
Had my vertebrae fused. Oh, that was funny. All right. We've got, believe it or not, we've got 8 minutes left. In that 8 minutes, what have we not asked you that maybe you want to talk about that we just have missed or anything? Anything that we haven't touched on that you want to share with us?
Well, I think if I had a message I wanted to give people or like something like that or I don't know. I'm not a big fan. I was trying to think of something philosophical and wonderful to say.
Yeah, profound.
But,
this is a profound moment here. No.
Yeah. Right. Thanks. But what I want to, you know, I think for people who are having a difficult time in life, because my life was really treacherous, most of it, especially before I found out I had Wilson's disease, because, you know, I was constantly trying to be a good person, but it always came out wrong. And everything changed for me when I decided to take charge of my health, like we were talking earlier, to question the doctors. And it's not just that the doctors don't know. You know, doctors nowadays, and this is something we have to face, medicine is a business. And these hospitals need to make money in order to continue. And the doctor that I follow, Dr. McDougall, who was a doctor in Hawaii, started prescribing diet instead of heart surgery, and the hospital came and told him, you can't do that. That's not how we make money. You need to do the surgery, not prescribe diet. And so all the other doctors stopped referring their patients to him, but they sent their family members to him. So, I mean, this is the kind of world we live in, and we have to take charge of our health. We have to think, am I being told this because it's what's going to help the bottom line of the hospital, or is this going to help me? And the only way to know that for sure is to do the research. You know, before we buy a car, we look at consumer index. We look at all these things. I mean, consumer reports, people go through a lot of effort before they put a lot of money out. Well, there's nothing more valuable than your life and your health. And we need to do more personal research and not just listen blanket what a doctor says, because they're under pressure from the hospital to sell certain drugs. They're under pressure from the hospital to sell certain procedures. You know, and plus, the average doctor coming out of medical school right now has studied 1 week of nutrition in order to get their medical license. So you're talking to doctors that probably know less nutrition than most mothers have to study in order to feed their kids right. So, I mean, seriously, so you have to be in charge of yourself, because if I had, if when the doctor told me I had 2 to 5 years to live, had
for
I
AIDS,
listened to him, I would not be talking to you now. I went through a few doctors, but the last one, he said I had 2 to 5 years to live. If I had listened to him, I'd be dead now and we wouldn't be talking. So when the doctors tell you this is your lifespan, it probably is if you do what they say. And if you take charge of your life, you know, there's a whole world out there. Plus, I think better. I'm making better decisions. I feel better. I like people better. I'm not as much of an introvert as I used to be. I still am. I'm kind of a hermit introvert. But that's something I wanted to say about working on the shows. I mean, that's what I love about working on these little shows as a guest star, is I get to walk into a world and be a big part of it, and then I can go home and be a hermit, and I don't have to do it every day. Because I do. I think it's from the 35 years of having Wilson's disease and not knowing it that kind of made me into a, you know, I withdraw a lot from people. But I love being able to go on a show and be all big and extroverted, and then it's over in one day. And so I get to live in a lot of different worlds and lives, and so that's exciting for me.
Yeah. Katie?
Well, you're just an incredible inspiration of someone who literally just every obstacle that came your way, you overcame it by just making up your mind you deserved something better and you wanted something better for yourself. So I you know, someone along the line, your grandparents, your mom, your family, whoever, really taught you well, Bergen, and inspired in you a fire. And your passion is very inspiring to me. It really is.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, you're absolutely. Passionary.
Passionary, I like that. All right, well, our time is up at this point, and I just want to thank you so much for being with us today. It is you are such a I like that word, Katie, passionary.
Yeah,
passionary. I like that word too.
Yeah.
It's great.
Well,
it's those of us that are
show.
Driven by a mission. Yep, you have a mission. And it's a great word.
Could you share with us one more time before we go the website that people could go to order your cookies, and if you want them to go, I'll show the other one, bergenwilliams.wordpress.com. But what was your other one?
Yeah, and that also goes. You can bergenwilliams.com takes you right there also. And the other one is eatmecookies. Eatmecookies.com. That's the name of my cookie company. And then also, just I'll plug this, as in March I'm going into production on my web series called Private Lives, and that'll be at privatelives.tv. And and I have a surprising guest star. I have a surprise guest star to be in the show that I think the General Hospital fans will be really excited to see. So that's all my stuff.
We hope you'll join us again, because we've just absolutely loved having you on the show.
Well,
that was a blast.
You. Thank you very much. And don't forget the lemon poppy seed cookie recipe.
Oh, no, I won't. Yeah, I'm going there.
Okay.
My mom will have made it for me.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah, excellent.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Okay,
have
thanks
a, great
a lot.
Day.
Bye, Bergen.
Bye,
you
Bergen.
Too.
Bye.
Bye.
Okay, here's my standard line. Isn't she cool?
Oh, my goodness. We have so much fun with these people. I mean, just so inspiring. And I love the fact that, you know, who you see on General Hospital, it's so much fun to see the real person underneath the character.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
It really is.
Yeah, and it is, it didn't stop snowing while we were, in fact, it's snowing more.
I know. And I am still going to, and I am inspired by Bergen, I am still going to go outside and unbury my hot tub and get in it. Because I can.
Because you can, exactly.
Because I can.
Because you can. Honey, what else are you doing today? We got about a minute left.
Like I said, we're
most of the day, though.
Oh, it sounds fun.
The hot tub. Yeah.
Oh, we're gonna curl up on the couch after we go into the hot tub in front of the fire and just relax and enjoy each other and myself and my daughter and just let the snow fall.
Yeah, I'm gonna go get my parka out in preparation for Minnesota.
Minnesota, that's right, Minnesota. Well, it can't be any worse than this, so.
I don't know.
But I thoroughly enjoyed that. That was really fun.
Yeah.
And now when I watch General Hospital, it'll be just a whole different appearance, you know, to be like, I know her.
Yeah. All right, my dear. Until next time, next Thursday, I think we have a show. And I don't have all the details in front of me, but I'm sure next Thursday we have a show, next Thursday or Friday. So have a great day. Enjoy your shoveling out the hot tub.
Yes. We'll do. And everybody else out there, have a best ever day.
Have a best ever day.
Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye.